The NFL season kicks off this weekend, so we're thinking football. America's most popular and lucrative sport has pretty much eclipsed baseball as our national pastime, or maybe we should say obsession. Our studios are in Green Bay Packer territory, a place where football is practically a religion. But football fandom doesn't sit pretty with everyone these days. Writer and lifelong NFL fan Steve Almond has done some serious soul-searching about it. He asked himself, why am I obsessed with an inherently violent, racist, and homophobic sport? Why do I love something that's so obviously wrong? Almond unpacks these questions in his book Against Football, One Fan's Reluctant Manifesto. Charles Monroe Kane sat down with him to talk some football.
What happened? I mean, was there one event that changed your mind that turned you against the sport you love?
Well, a couple of things. One, I still love football, and, you know, I have tremors when I have to not watch it. So it's not like I suddenly decided, oh, football is brutal and terrible and savage. And it's more like I realized, oh, my God, this game is really amazing, and it's got a real grip on my heart, my soul, my wallet. But it's also all these other things. And the thing that really started it, I think actually the thing that started it was I'd been seeing the news reports. Everybody's been seeing the news reports
right.
about the links between playing football and the developing brain damage. And that was something that I, you know, out of one corner of my eye, I'd been watching at the same time as sneaking off to the bar to watch the game with my neighbor so we don't go crazy. So last summer, I got a call from my brother telling me that something was very wrong with my mom, and I had to fly out to see her. She was in intensive care. What had happened was that my mom had gone into a delirium in which she had almost no cognitive function. It was very abrupt, very frightening. And when I came into the hospital expecting to see my mom, I did, but she was not there. She didn't know where she was. She didn't always recognize me. And there were little painful bursts of lucidity where she knew that something was terribly wrong. She described it to me as an awful dream. And that was the fact that she didn't have much brain function. So I was really face to face with something that I had not even really conceived of before, which is what it's like when somebody you love who's important to you has lost their mind. And, you know, they talk about, oh, well, you know, the self resides in our soul and in our heart. And it's nonsense, man. It's in your brain. That's what makes you who you are. And when your brain is gone, you are gone. And it's absolutely heartbreaking to see up front. And I think seeing her, Charles, really sort of connected the two synapses in my head. The one that was like, I just want to see the game. It's an amazing game. It's so stirring, exciting. It's so dramatically satisfying, etc. And the other synapse that says, hey, there's something really rotten in the state of Denmark. This game is bad for people, you know, the tug at your conscience. When I started to look into football more deeply, it got much, much darker.
But you're a lifelong fan. You're a Raider fan, right?
You just have to bring it up, and it's
Sorry.
Painful. But yes, I am an Oakland Raider. I was. No, you know what? It's like an alcoholic. I'm going to stand up and say, my name is Steve Almond. I'm an Oakland Raider fan.
Well, I just for disclosure here, for people listening, I'm the guy doing the interview. I am a major football fan. I love football. I played football in high school. I live in Wisconsin. I'm a Green Bay Packer fan, tried and true. I'm the kind of guy that, like, grows a mohawk and paints it green. I paint my face, take my shirt off at below zero up there at Lambeau.
Wow.
And if you go to the Northwoods of Wisconsin, it is like a religion up there. I love
oh
the
my
NFL.
God.
What about you? Why do you love it? What do you love about
it? Well, I'll tell you. So the reason that I think football is so remarkable is because there is no single game I know of that so clearly connects us to the intuitive physical pleasures of being a kid. Running, jumping, leaping, tackling, throwing, catching. And it's very elemental. It isn't as regimented as baseball. There's no esoteric equipment like hockey. It really is, take away everything, you know, all the uniforms and all the playbook and everything. It boils down to these very intuitive pleasures that you see on display and that we recognize intuitively. You know, I watched like John Elway when I was, I sold hot dogs at the Stanford games and when he was in, you know, quarterback at Stanford, and Stanford wasn't very good, but just watching him every game, you are going to see something miraculous. You are going to see his body intuitively discover in the midst of a complete ruined play some miraculous possibility, and his body was going to make that miracle happen. That is why we go to sports. And football does it more purely than any other sport. It is the most strategically dense sport and also the most primally gratifying. You get sort of brains and brawn all in the same package.
But Steve, your book is called Against Football.
I'm going to go ahead and say it's the best thing since sliced bread, but the sliced bread is not good for you. The sliced bread actually corrodes your soul. And so it tastes delicious, and you should definitely butter it and maybe face paint it or whatever, but it also is connected to all these negative things. So I happen to think that football is a huge industry, that football is a profoundly violent game, and that I believe football really desensitizes us, gives us a greater tolerance for violence, a greater tolerance, I think, for racism, for militarism, and is in the sport itself and the way that it's been commercialized, the way in which they take those great exalted emotions that we were just expressing and they basically treat those as a cash register, the nihilistic greed of the sport is insane and out of control. And the ultimate lesson or the ultimate point of my book is we, you and me, Oakland Raiders face paint guy and, you know, green and yellow mohawk guy are the ones who give them that power. We, the fans, have made the football industrial complex. That's on us.
Well, let's break it down a little bit. Football is violent, right? Hitting each other is part of the game. And not just hitting each other, these big, huge muscle men, supermen of the NFL, hitting each other. People are going to get hurt. Do you think that violence is a necessary evil in the NFL, or is it intrinsic?
I think it's an evil in the NFL, and I think it's probably necessary for certain fans to enjoy the game. I mean, look, tomorrow, say you're Roger Goodell, okay? We've got like $30 million just lying around our apartment. We're like lighting cigars with $1,000 bills. And, you know, that's us. We're Roger Goodell, okay? We have this sport that's inherently violent. There are all these collisions. They're built into it. Mass times force equals velocity. I think I remember that from high school. The players are bigger and faster than ever. And so they're going to be getting into all these collisions because that's the nature of the game. There are going to be all these big catastrophic injuries, you know, concussions, you know, Jaguar player who suffered a stroke during the game after a hit. But there's also, more dangerously and invisibly, all these small sub-concussive hits, right, that are not quite a concussion. They're like a small car accident inside your helmet. And that's causing brain damage. It can cause brain damage. And we're seeing some of our most famous players, Junior Seau, certainly Tony Dorsett, Terry Bradshaw, all of these Hall of Famers who are either, you know, Junior Seau took his life, and those two, Bradshaw and Dorsett, have talked openly about how they're struggling with cognitive function. They're brain damaged. So if you're Roger Goodell, you have to realize, wait a second, I want this game to be profitable. That's my job. But there's also this violence, and I'm having to pay out billions of dollars. Probably the settlement for the huge concussion lawsuit is going to amount to billions of dollars. Why not just take the violence out of the game? Why not remove that component if it's really about grace and athleticism and strategy and so forth? The reason they don't is because we, the fans, again, it's on us, dude. We, the fans, want the game to be violent. We want it to be graceful, exciting, dramatically satisfying, but part of that satisfaction comes from the fact that players are at risk, and we really get off on it. And the TV networks know this. They replay those injuries, those big hits, over and over. They're the ones who are holding those parabolic mics on the sidelines so you can hear the sound of impact. They're now miking up players actually on their shoulder pads or, you know, inside their uniforms so that we can hear the bone-crunching, bone-rattling hits. That is us. We make those decisions. And we can make the decision at a certain point, if we really consult with our conscience and really look at why we're drawn to the game, we could say, you know what, I'm turning away from the game until it either tones down or eliminates the violent part of the equation. But there are enough fans who really, that's what they turn to the game about. And my book is essentially saying, okay, own it, dude. You know what I mean? Don't say that you really love.
Be honest. You liked that hit. His arms are outstretched and that cornerback came in.
Bingo.
You liked it. The Green Bay Packers are opening the NFL against the Seattle Seahawks, which when this airs would have been a couple days earlier. How many players are we going to lose to injury in that game? Because Seattle's known in their secondary for injuring people.
That is your job as a defensive football player, is to be intimidating and to to null out your empathy, to just dull it out and get rid of it. Your job is to be a predator, to hurt somebody, to play lights out football, to make them know you've been there, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There are all these euphemisms that coaches and players and broadcasters and pundits use to describe the process of somebody no longer feeling concern about the moral implications of a violent act that they're about to commit. And I know that it's within the context of football, but it's still knocking somebody out. You know, when I was a kid, I saw Jack Tatum on a play in a preseason game. Charles, you probably remember this. It was in like 1978. And Daryl Stingley was a wide receiver for the New England Patriots, their best wide receiver. And Jack Tatum was the most feared cornerback in the league. And on a play where Daryl Stingley could not even get to the ball, it was that far out of reach, he lunged for it. Jack Tatum put a hit on him. Stingley tried to duck his head real quickly, and he fell to the ground in a heap and was paralyzed. And it was quite clear from the way that his body had fallen on the ground, if you look at it, that he was in terrible shape and that something was fundamentally wrong with him. Jack Tatum did not for one moment say, "Oh my God, that was a really tough hit. Are you okay, fellow human being?" He strutted away. The other Oakland Raiders strutted away. And I, as an 11-year-old kid, or however old it was, maybe 7 years old, I didn't say, "Wow, a human being might have just gotten seriously injured," and I watched it as a form of entertainment. What's going on inside my conscience? Why am I being turned into a person who views that as entertainment? I didn't do that. And I, you know, it's taken me 40 years to really take stock of that, because the mentality of football is really, in a certain way, it's like capitalism and shoulder pads and steroids. And that our need specifically for violence and aggression is a central pillar of why that industry is so powerful.
You know, I hate to ask you this, but I think it's important. Do you miss the Raiders? Do you miss watching football?
I will not be watching the games this year, but that doesn't mean I won't want to be. And it's really a different thing. Like, the path I'm recommending is that people read the book and think about the role that football plays in their lives and think about the subtle, insidious aspects of the game, as well as just the outright nihilistic greed, the damage I think the game does to, the way that we perceive women, the way that we perceive, you know, men of color, the way that we perceive economic justice in the world. Like, I think there's a lot of stuff that's just quite clearly bad for America that football represents and fosters. So that's one thing. But again, that's superego stuff. There's another part of me that says, yeah, but the game is remarkable and beautiful, and I get a lot of pleasure out of it. And it's not going to be easy for me to sit there and just say, okay, well, now I'm done with that because it's so dumb and I'm not interested anymore and I'm above it. If I didn't care about football at all, I don't think I would have written a whole book about it. I care passionately about it. I'm not trying to rescue it. I'm not trying to save it. I'm trying to see it for what it is and get other fans who feel like I do, who have the same crazy, to start to think about what it means in their lives.
Steve Almond, talking with Charles Monroe Kane. The book is Against Football, One Fan's Reluctant Manifesto.